Hello and welcome to Mountain State Views. I'm your host, Stephen Allen Adams. I'm a state government reporter for Ogden Newspapers in West Virginia. That's the Wheeling Intelligencer, the Parkersburg News and Sentinel, the Weirton Daily Times, the Intermountain and Elkins, and the Martinsburg Journal. Happy New Year. I know it's been a few weeks, but happy to be back with you. We are in our legislative session, wrapping up the second week. We are in the middle of candidate filing, and we are seeing different candidates file. Some of those are people who announced earlier last year. Some of them are new, and I'm sure we'll be talking to several of them as we move on. As you recall, the last time we were here, sitting on the front porch, so to speak, we talked to State Senator Mike Stewart, former U.S. Attorney, former chairman of the Trump campaign in 2016. And we talked about his campaign for Attorney General. We've been trying to nail down times to do this for a long time, but we were finally able to do it. So I have the follow-up to that interview, and I have the other Republican opponent in that race. That's State Auditor J.B. McCuskey. As you know, he was formerly a candidate for governor for the Republican primary, but he decided to stop doing that and focus on the Attorney General's race. He's got a couple terms under his belt as state auditor, but he has a background in law. He's an attorney. He was a member of the House of Delegates for a couple of terms. His father is a former state Supreme Court justice, so he's got a pedigree for sure for the job. So we sat down with him here probably about a couple weeks ago, but it's not a dated interview or anything. This is going to focus kind of primarily on the things that he wants to do as Attorney General, similar to the interview we did with Mike Stewart. So without further delay, here is that interview with State Auditor and Republican candidate for Attorney General, J.B. McCuskey. State Auditor J.B. McCuskey, running for Attorney General for the Republican primary here in West Virginia in 2024. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me.
How is the campaign going so far? You know, we are now in the candidate filing period. We really are in the election season between now and the May 14th primary. So how's it going so far?
Yeah, so it's going incredibly well. Since we filed or announced that I was running for Attorney General several months ago, the outpouring of support has been outrageous and incredibly humbling. We are raising a ton of money, which is unfortunately, but super important in this day and age. But more importantly than that, the enthusiasm that we're seeing in places like Bluefield and Huntington and Martinsburg and Wheeling and obviously Charleston and where I'm from in Clarksburg and up in Morgantown is just absolutely astounding. We have a statewide name ID, and I have a very strong record of accomplishment over the last 7 years in the auditor's office. And West Virginians are very, very excited to see what my perspective and my goals in government are going to do to continue Patrick Morrissey's incredible work in the Attorney General's office.
Yeah, tell me a little bit. Obviously, you did make a transition because you were running for governor, but you, of course, do have a background. Most people don't stop to think about this. Every time they see a candidate, they think it's the first time they've ever seen him. You have a background in law. You were an attorney for a long time. You, of course, come from a prominent legal family, your father being a former Supreme Court.
And my sister is the dean of a law school.
Oh, well, there you go.
She's like me, but she's really, really smart.
So what brings you to the Attorney General's race? Why is this something you want?
Yeah, so we live in a time where West Virginia is intensely ready for a big change. And we have an opportunity in front of us right now that requires public servants to step up and to make sure that the economic development that's happening in West Virginia actually changes the future for both for my children, for everyone's children, and for all West Virginians. And so for me, the opportunity to be the tip of the spear that's making sure that our federal government isn't reaching into West Virginia and slowing the pace of our growth was just absolutely incredible. And I have spent my entire adult life practicing law, including the last 8 years here in the auditor's office. And I have been able to combine my legal skills, my legal education, with a lot of government experience. And so I believe that I will bring a really, really great perspective to the Attorney General's office on how we both protect us from the federal government's overreach, but also how we start to truly reform our own bureaucracies to make sure that they are effective and accountable to the people of West Virginia.
Very good. Priorities. Obviously, you've had time to think about what you want to do when you get in there. Obviously, there are three terms since 2013 under Attorney General Morrissey's belt. And it was a big change because he took over for Democratic Attorney General Daryl McGraw, who had been in there, I believe, since the early 90s. So you've got sort of big shoes to fill going into that office. I'm sure there's also things that you want to do that perhaps haven't been thought about by that office currently. So what are your priorities? What do you see the maybe top three priorities for you should the voters decide that you're the guy?
Yeah. So priority number one is maintaining the incredibly professional and kind of world-class lawyers that work in the office now. The reason that our state under current Attorney General Morrissey is so effective at leading on huge issues, be it Waters of the United States or being the EPA case or right now the Trump case keeping him on the ballot, is because we have lawyers who are at the absolute top of their field. Full stop. I would love to make sure that we are ensuring that those lawyers, as much as humanly possible, are coming from West Virginia and are coming from my alma mater, West Virginia University College of Law. But maintaining that level of legal acumen in the office is the most important thing that we can do so we can continue to be leaders on these issues that affect West Virginia's economy and the people. Second, the next attorney general is going to have to work with the next governor in, like I said before, reforming the entire state's bureaucracy. What right. we see is that our government gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more expensive every year. And we do not see, in my opinion, the kind of results that should be resulting from that kind of investment. When you look at the three things that I've always believed the government is required to do, which is educate our children, provide infrastructure to our people and to our businesses, and to take care of people who are unable to take care of themselves, we are not producing results in any of those three areas that are that match the funding and the effort that we're putting into it. So what I see then is that it is not a spending problem, but it is a process problem. And so the Attorney General's role as the state's general counsel will be very key when the next governor, hopefully, looks at our bureaucracy and says, my priority number one is providing our children with a great education, taking care of people who can't take care of themselves, and ensuring that every single West Virginian has access to clean water, cheap electricity, cheap gas, and that our businesses can rely on our fire service, on all of the infrastructure that I just mentioned, so that we can continue to grow.
Well, I'd say what would be priority number three?
Well, number three is to, and this is a pretty interesting thought that I have. We spend a lot of time, and we will always spend a lot of time, bidding out work from the Attorney General's office.
Sure.
We have to bid the work of the office because it is not cost effective to build a law firm the size that you need to take on big drug companies and to take on, you know, the big, well-heeled firms in New York and Philadelphia and Los Angeles. What I would love to do is to start building a coalition of in-state firms that are both conservative and like-minded as we are, to start to bid most of this work to, if not all of it. And I think what Attorney General Morrissey has started to do is to build a team of young lawyers that come out of his office and open up firms in West Virginia who have the acumen and the experience to do these things. And I think we need to continue that. I think we need to work with our state's university, my alma mater, WVU College of Law, to start finding people who are interested in building those kinds of firms to take the work on of the Attorney General so that, you know, when we are paying these lawyers, the money is staying inside of West Virginia, and we know that the people representing us represent our values.
Well, let's go into that for a moment.
Sure.
Because that's gotten a little bit of attention here, and I won't go into the food fight specifically between the parties, but the issue has come up.
Sure.
About outside counsel and bidding of those cases. And I think there are cases to be made that I think under Attorney General Morrissey, for sure, that they did make some changes. Now, some of those were legislative changes that they didn't push themselves. But I think you can at least look at the rates and see that we're bringing in more awards and settlements that are at larger dollar amounts. But the percentage that's going out to outside firms who obviously competitively bid to represent the state in these particular cases are smaller, but of course the dollar amounts are larger by the result of having larger settlements. So kind of in line to what you were just talking about there, and maybe some of the things you just mentioned there would actually sort of reform that a little bit, but would you make any changes to that process and how that works? Because that's something that some are calling for just another look at, and in light of larger settlements, maybe the percentages need to be changed. With that said, if you change it too much, are you going to discourage quality law firms from being able to participate in that sort of stuff and actually harm the state in future law cases?
Sure. So the answer to your question is the biggest step we need to take is to put the cities and counties under the same requirements that the state has, right? The state, I believe, was capped out at 8% around the recovery. And one of the things that we have to be very careful here is changing the law based on a generational lawsuit, right? We're talking about $1.1 billion, $1.2 billion in a pill pushing case where the drug companies targeted specifically Appalachians to make an enormous amount of money and destroy both our culture and our economy. That is something that's likely never going to happen again.
Right.
And you have to be very careful to change laws based on very specific fact patterns, right? Because they don't always apply the same way when the fact pattern is a little more common or a little more general, right? But I do think the numbers and the bidding requirements that we have on our outside counsels, I think on the state side, it's pretty good. I think that we have to find a balance, like you said, to be able to recruit the best law firms and the best lawyers in the country to come in and win these cases with us. But you also have to make sure that you're keeping in mind the taxpayer and the ultimate plaintiff in these cases, which is every single West Virginian.
Very good. Well, related to that a little bit, will obviously be the goal, the whole principal part of what's really bringing attention to this, because we did have the around $1 billion settlement in regards to opioid major manufacturers, distributors, and we already know full well the damage that's been done in West Virginia for prescription opioids. That has really, we still feel the effects of. While that's not particularly the drug of choice now, you know, that turned to meth and that turned to heroin and now that turned to fentanyl and now that's turning to xylazine, I believe that's what the one drug is called. And it just, you know, we're still feeling the effects all because there was ready access to these relatively affordable, plentiful opioids. So obviously the office is still going to have a role in those efforts going forward to not just deal with the effects of the prescription opioids, but also trying to combat what's coming down the pike and try to see ahead this time versus be reactive to what's happening. So what type of role do you see the office having in regards to that? Because obviously you don't have criminal enforcement ability, but you do have tools at your disposal.
Sure. So for the last 7 years in the auditor's office, we have made West Virginia the most transparent and accountable state in the United States. That's something that we are incredibly proud of. And I think when you look at what we're going to be doing with the West Virginia First Foundation, it really comes down to those two concepts. How are we going to make sure that this money is spent accountably and transparently? And I have built relationships throughout the state with county commissioners, with mayors, with county clerks, with volunteer fire departments, you name it, who all understand that I am with them. And that the processes that I am bringing to them are designed to both help them be more effective public servants, but importantly to help their government be more effective at solving problems for their constituents. And the Family First or the West Virginia First Foundation has really two goals. One is to make sure that we are solving the financial problems that the opioid crisis caused in the past. That is. Well, I said it, number one, that is probably the second most important goal. The most important goal is to make sure that this generation of people in West Virginia is decidedly less addicted to drugs than the current one. If we are in 20 years, somebody is sitting here having this interview with you about the same topic, we have failed. It doesn't matter if we spend $1 billion fixing the financial problems of the past. If we have to continue to fight this problem, nothing else will change. And so this foundation's number one goal, in my opinion, is to make sure that this next generation of West Virginia teens and youngsters and young people has a different outlook, different perspective, and a different understanding of why these drugs are so incredibly harmful, not just to them, but to their communities in general. And I think, just to tie a bow on that, as I'm working with the Attorney General now in my role as the auditor, we are installing systems and processes that enable counties and cities to be confident in spending this money on solving those two issues simultaneously, and doing so in a way that their constituents can see it and they can be confident that what they're doing complies with state law and the memorandum of understanding.
Very well. Yeah, because that was going to be a follow-up too, because I know that you all recently put out a press release in regards to that. And I think there's a lot of concern out there that there's not that many there's more safeguards on the money that's going into the West Virginia First Foundation fund. And I think there's more guardrails on what can be done with that. But I think the question is, what are the guardrails for the money that's going to cities and counties? And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know there's that many guardrails on it. So what type of guidance do you give them so they're using it not just to buy a whole bunch of fancy new toys, but are ultimately trying to use it to curtail some of these issues stemming from opioid use in their own communities?
So the biggest guardrail is the voting booth. And I have long believed that complete government transparency is the ultimate guardrail to all government spending. People will not waste money when they know that the voters who are going to vote for them can see what they've spent. And when we created the West Virginia Checkbook, that was our ultimate goal, was to make West Virginia citizens the most educated voters in the country. Because the problems that we see in our government can all be solved by an incredibly well-educated electorate who cares about our future and understands that they're voting for people that either told them the truth or didn't. And so we have to empower our local governments. We have to say, look, here are the ways you can spend this money. And the memorandum of understanding that came out with the lawsuit has various ways that you can spend it. But ultimately, right, it comes down to a decision by every elected official to say, is this the right thing to do with this money? And I would submit that that is a fairly, it's a binary decision, and it's one that every elected official can feel pretty confident about when they make those decisions. Is this right or is this wrong? So we empower people to make decisions. We tell them how they can and cannot spend the money, and tell their constituents what happened, and then allow them to be held accountable for those decisions. That's the way the system is supposed to work. And I think that is the best way to make sure that this money is specifically spent to solve the two problems that you and I discussed before.
Sure. Let's turn to the federal government, because a big part of what the Attorney General's office, particularly over the last several years, does is been going to bat for West Virginia, representing the interests of West Virginia, both as a government, both its people, in regards to perceived overreach from Washington, whether that's environmental. We've seen some two big victories in regards to the EPA from Attorney General Morrissey. But on multiple fronts in regards to what the federal government does. So where do you see your role coming into this, continuing that work to try to represent the interests of West Virginia, particularly when you feel or voters or residents feel that it's being kind of trampled by federal government regulation?
Sure. So my legal experience started at a place called the American Center for Law and Justice.
Yes.
So I was at WVU College of Law, and I started working with the Sekulow family at the ACLJ right out of law school, and actually while I was in law school. And so my first foray into the law was how do interest groups push back against the federal government who was trying to slow down religious freedom.
Sure.
And we also worked a lot on the international stage working to try to release Jewish and Christian pastors and rabbis who had been in prison in places that, like we see in the news today. And then I moved on to my a couple of law firms here in Charleston, Schumann, McCuskey, and Slicer, and then ultimately Steptoe & Johnson, where I spent the majority of my time either defending professional malpractice cases, being, you know, defending our medical professionals from malpractice cases, or working with coal, oil, and gas companies on either their federal issues or on their business development issues. And so the totality of my legal career has really sort of spanned the gamut of how is it that we can use the law in West Virginia to ensure that our citizens are able to enjoy the natural resources that we have, to profit from the natural resources that we have, and to make sure that people enjoy the freedoms that are guaranteed by our Constitution. And I think that those things, making sure that the federal government is not stopping our progress and not stopping our people from using the things at our disposal and our moral compass to grow our state both in population and in richness. And secondly, to make sure that the rights of West Virginians, which are now being dictated by people who quite frankly, do not have a rural perspective, right? I mean, when you sit in Charleston, it's hard to, sometimes you forget that West Virginia is an intensely rural state.
Right.
And there is a value set in middle America that is incredibly different than it is in New York, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. And our values are, in my opinion, the most important in the country. And making sure that all Americans have places where they can come and live the lifestyle that West Virginia allows them to is the most important thing that our attorney general can do, is making sure that the single most sellable asset of West Virginia, which is the value set of the people that live here, is able to be maintained and protected against politicians who, quite frankly, don't understand us and don't really care about us.
The attorney general's office, at the end of the day, is the state's law firm.
Yep.
So represents the office in various civil actions. Talk a little bit about that role, because I do kind of feel like to some, and I know to some extent the office still has to use outside attorneys, depending on the type of litigation. There's some pretty complicated civil litigation right now going on against the Division of Corrections Rehabilitation, the former DHHR. But talk a little bit about just what the goal is going into that, trying to kind of bring it back into where these agencies are utilizing the Attorney General's office for these type of services versus necessarily trying to do their own thing or try to go out there and get an outside firm, that sort of thing.
So I think the most important thing is, again, talent generation, right? And I have the amount of outreach and respect that I have found from the legal community in West Virginia has been truly humbling. And what I know is that when I'm sworn in as the Attorney General, I'm going to have a very unique ability to recruit the best talented West Virginia lawyers from across West Virginia to come in and do these jobs. The number one goal of the Attorney General, the number one duty constitutionally, is to be the lawyer for the state of West Virginia. And that means providing highways, DHHR, Department of Education, you name the agency, we are their lawyer. And ensuring that we have incredibly competent lawyers in every single one of those places who I trust and also who that agency will trust is wildly important. And I am incredibly confident in my ability to recruit that team of lawyers and, importantly, to make sure that they're coming from the industries that they're going to represent. So EPA needs to have lawyers who understand, or not EPA, DEP needs to have lawyers who understand those processes, who've worked in their realm. I've spent a very large portion of my career working in that exact place. We need to make sure that DHHR has lawyers that understand healthcare, that understand healthcare law, that understand how and why to make healthcare less expensive for West Virginians, but also is it to encourage our private healthcare and public healthcare facilities to be more profitable. We need to make sure that we have lawyers that understand contracts at highways. You can go on and on and on, but the idea here is that this law firm needs to have the best lawyers possible, and I am very, very excited about the transition and working with the myriad of lawyers who've reached out to me with words of support and hopefulness that they can turn their career into a career of public service.
I guess my final question would be this. Obviously, there's other things that office does, including consumer protection.
Sure.
I know that's something you have worked on a little bit as state auditor as well. I know you've worked closely with AARP in regards to elder fraud issues. I assume that that's probably something you're probably doing this year, too, for this legislative session, because I know you've pushed that for a couple of years. Talk about your kind of goals and what you want to see that office do going forward.
Sure. So we're sort of getting back to what we were talking about with the drug company cases, obviously, right? And so what we have to be doing is working within the framework of what our tort laws are now. We have to be very leery to not invent new torts to try to protect West Virginians. We have to protect West Virginians with the laws that we have now. And I think that's where this idea that we need to recruit these incredible West Virginia law firms to handle these cases comes in. They understand our law, and they are intent on making sure that our citizens are represented in the money that is ultimately recovered, both goes to the legislature, but stays within the confines of West Virginia.
Actually, I want to back up. I do have one final question.
Yeah.
And I think I asked one of your opponents this on the podcast here recently. In regards to criminal authority, is that something that you think should be given to the Attorney General's office? Because right now, it doesn't really have, except in very limited circumstances. Those are laid out in state law and state code. But is that something that you think is a component missing currently from the Attorney General's office? Or do you think that should be done maybe in some sort of limited scale? Or do you think that is something that should be left to how it's done now? Basically, county prosecutors really handle that sort of thing, including referrals from the Attorney General's office and whatnot. Where do you stand on that issue?
So the auditor's office actually is, in many respects, the only constitutional office that has prosecutorial power. So for the last 7 years, we have been able to prosecute cases. We have found, and it was our mission, and it was our credo, that county prosecutors should do this work. We have 55 incredible county prosecutors, 55 incredible county sheriffs. We have an incredible state police. And we have prosecuted, I believe, 43 felony convictions in the last 5 years using our county prosecutors. And in each instance, we did all of the investigatory work, and we presented that prosecutor with a case that they could bring in front of a judge and quickly and easily put somebody in jail for stealing the people's money. And with all that being said, what I found is that the best way to do this is for the state to handle its job and to allow our prosecutors to do the prosecuting. They are the professionals. They understand their jurisdictions. They understand their judges. They understand their grand juries. And I do not believe that the Attorney General needs any further power. And furthermore, I am incredibly confident that our 55 county prosecutors are both doing the job they need to be doing now and will continue to do so in the future.
Very good. State Auditor J.B. McCuskey running for the Republican nomination for U.S., well, not U.S., but West Virginia Attorney General. Thank you for joining me today.
Stephen, thanks for having me.
Special thanks to J.B. McCuskey for joining me. Definitely appreciate the conversation. And the goal as we go on here is to do some more interviews with candidates for statewide offices. And, of course, the legislative session's going on. We do these interviews right now from the from my offices here in the Capitol Press Room in the basement of the State Capitol building. So hopefully we'll get some lawmakers down in here and we'll talk about some of the important bills moving during the legislative session. But until then, if you like this podcast, be sure to like and subscribe and review and tell your friends and all that. Special thanks to Ogden Newspapers for allowing me to be able to do this. And of course, the music, as always, is from our friends, local punk rock band Jerks. I'm your host, Stephen Allen Adams. We will see you here soon on the front porch here for Mountain State Views.